thank you, Ben, and thanks for inviting me here. Yeah, so today I want to talk about, you know, the story, which is quite old and well-known for Grassmannian, although it has had lots of impact, has lots of generalizations, and is still playing a big role in very recent constructions. And I want to talk about a generalization, or part of this at least, for Kona-Kermanshai. And all of this is joint work. So some of the highlights of this story for Grassmannians include things like, so my Sagby bases are clocks, right? So, you know, these for Grassmannians, these are sort of Kruger coordinates. And, you know, straightening laws play an important role, as do semi-standard Young tableau. So we're going to talk about a generalization of these constructions for Kronecker moduli. And then when you get to the torque degeneration part, the torque degeneration I'm going to be interested in is the one that gives rise to the Gelfand-Setlin polytope, which has lots of nice combinatorial descriptions, including ladder diagrams. And then when you get to the mirror symmetry part, for Grassmannians, we this comes from an old mirror. So the mirror you get is an old mirror, which is the Shiong mirror, which also plays a central role in a more recent construction by Marsh and Reach called the Pfluger. So my plan is to explain the story for Grassmannians and as far as it's known for Kronecker moduli. So I'm going to start by telling you about what Kronecker moduli are and how to construct them. So Kronecker moduli are a small example of quiver moduli. So I will just remind you, if you're not familiar with the construction of quiver moduli spaces. So if we let Q be a quiver, so that means this is a directed graph, and my Q0 are my vertices, and my Q1 are my arrows, and I'm going to assume it's acyclic as a directive graph. And then the other piece of notation I need, so I have source and target maps for my arrows to my vertices. Then I want to build a moduli space out of it. And so I need two more pieces of information to do that. So I need a dimension vector, so I assign a dimension to each vertex. So let's label my vertices to row, and then this dimension vector is just R1 through R row, and that allows me to build the vector space. So we can look at a vector space of all representations of the quiver. So a representation of a quiver, of this quiver, is a linear map for each arrow in the quiver from a vector space determined by your dimension vector. So the moduli space we're interested in is studying these maps up to a group action, or these representations up to a group action. And the group action is given by G, is GL, product of all the GLRIs from I is equal to 1. And this acts by change of basis. Note this action is not effective, which just because if you take the diagonal inside here, when you act by change of basis, you're going to have that cancel out. So we just have a C star in there with just our generic stabilizer, so we just have to keep track of that a little bit. So it's not effective. So I'm going to call my lambda 0 from C star to G, the diagonal one parameter subgroup, which is the kernel of the action. I'm going to call lambda 0. So we want to study V up to G, and a direction of G, and a standard way of doing this is using GIT. So I'm going to build this GIT quotient. And so the last piece of data I need to define my GIT quotient is a stability condition. So and the stability condition, what it does is it tells me how to delete a bad locus out of V, which this space here, so that my quotient is protective, right? So this stability condition, in this case, since in general it's going to be a linearized line bundle, but since our vector space, since our thing we're quotienting is just a vector space, I just need to tell you an action of G on C, so in other words, it's a character. And to account for this stabilizer, I want that the character lambda 0. Zero. And then now, this gives us our quiver modulus space. Denote M. Okay. So these were introduced by Alistair King, and so he showed a bunch of things about them. Some things he showed is that if the stable locus is equal to the semi-stable locus, so these are sort of good and very good subsets of B determined by your stability condition, and your dimension vector is indivisible, then this name of quiver moduli space is justified. This is a fine moduli space, in fact. So all of the quiver moduli spaces I'm going to talk about are going to satisfy these two conditions, and then I'm also going to require that my unstable locus has codimension of this two. So this is a very general construction, but I'm actually interested in just the quiver moduli that give rise to Kronecker and Grassmannians. So let me tell you what those are. Okay, so Kronecker quivers are basically the smallest examples of this. So when you just have two vertices, and n arrows between them. So these are technically generalized Kronecker quivers, but I mean, skip the generalized part. So I want to assign a dimension vector. So I'll just write the dimensions next to the vertex that they have. And it turns out that up to a positive scalar, there's only one interesting stability condition, which is when we take theta to be minus R2, R1. And so this minus R2, R1 is to make sure that the pairing with the lambda 0 is equal to 0, because if you take the dot product of those two, you get 0. Okay, so now we can just follow the construction I described and get a moduli space. So I'm going to define Kn R1, R2 to be this GIT quotient. And I want to make sure that I have all of these assumptions. So in particular, I need that R is indivisible. So I'm going to assume that the GCD R1 and R2 is equal to 1. And so once you make that assumption, then you get everything else that I said that I would like. So all of those assumptions above over there hold. I've underlined. And our Kronecker moduli space is a smooth Picard rank one Fano variety of dimension and R1, R2 minus R1 squared minus R2 squared plus 1 and Fano index n. And it's pretty clear that these are going to be isomorphic if you swap R1 and R2. So I'm just going to assume that my R1 is less than R2. Okay, so some of these are Grassmannians. So if you take R1 to be equal to 1, then let's see what you get. So that's going to be the Grassmannian, and let me show you how to see that. So if you take R1 equal to 1, then our vector space is this direct sum over the n arrows of matrices of size R2 by 1, and there's n of these. And so we might as well take all of these and build it into one big matrix. So this is just R2 by n matrices, and the stability condition picks out the stable locus or the semi-stable locus, which are equal, and these are just full rank matrices here. So matrices of rank R2. And then when you take your quotient by G, what you're doing is you're just acting, you're just saying that you are only interested in these up to change of basis. And so this is just rank R2, the JT quotient is just rank R2 quotients at C to the N, which either is the Grassmannian on the nose or is obviously by dual equal to rank R2 subspaces of C to the N. So this is Ger. So, are there any questions at this point? No. Okay. So now I'm sort of going to tell you about these three constructions. So I'm going to tell you about Cox rings for Grassmannians and Kronecker quivers simultaneously, and then I'll talk about torque degenerations and mirror symmetry one by one. So the longest part, which will take me a while to get everything I need down, is this Cox ring part. Semi-invariants or elements of the Cox ring for a Grassmannian are pretty simple, but they're considerably more complicated for Kronecker moduli spaces. So, let me first tell you about Cox rings. So roughly speaking, the Cox ring is a ring generated by all sections, global sections, of all line bundles. And it's named after David Cox because it's a generalization of the homogeneous coordinate ring of a toric variety. So to figure out what it is for a Clover moduli space or a Kronecker moduli space more specifically, we need to figure out what the line bundles are and then what the sections are. So let me first tell you about line bundles. So here's one way to get a line bundle. If we have, if we pick a character, alpha, of the group that we're taking our GIT quotient by. And we better assume that it pairs to zero with this lambda zero. Then we can define, we can look at the semi-stable locus of our vector space cross C, the trivial line. This is a trivial line bundle over the semi-stable locus. And now we have a group action of G both upstairs, where here we have just the usual G action, and here we use alpha to define our action, and down here. And so if we take the quotient both upstairs and downstairs, we end up with a line bundle. And if we are interested in sections of this line bundle of this form, well, we could just start by a section of, before we take our quotient by G, so I'll just erase that, a section right here, so some map, some section of this trivial line bundle, so S section trivial line bundle, which is G equivariant, this gives rise to a section of our alpha. So that's one way to get sections. And so it would be a little bit easier if we didn't have this semi-stable locus condition. So if you forget about the semi-stable locus restriction right here, what you get is a semi-invariant. So I'm going to define a semi-invariant. So a polynomial f inside CV is a semi-invariant of weight alpha if, basically, like the section, it's G equivariant of that weight. So for all G in G, f of G times V is theta of G. So I'm going to call the set of all semi-invariants of weight alpha with respect to our group action G of V to be this set here. So semi-invariants of weight.
Assuming that this is a stable locus in the sense
of
outside.
Yeah.
So.
But this is, now I'm dropping any, so I'm talking about V now, the whole vector space. So it's bigger for sure. But yeah, we're just going to, it turns out, since I assume that the unstable locus has codimension at least 2,
yes,
then it's good. Yeah. So, and then I'm going to, if I take the direct sum over all of these alphas, then I get the semi-invariant ring, which is a graded ring by the character group of G. Then, as you're suggesting, and it's true under our assumptions, but if you don't have them, it can be more tricky. So there's a bunch of ways to derive this. So it shows up in a paper by Kuhil, also Franzen, Reinecke, and Sabatini have it. In this particular context, you get that the Cox ring of this GIT quotient is just the semi-invariant ring. So we're going to now focus at exclusive, I mean, we're just going to talk about these semi-invariants here. So the next thing then to tell you about is semi-invariants of this vector space V, which I can also call rep QR. So before we take the GIT quotient, what are these semi-invariants here? So this has been studied by a lot of people. So I forget when exactly, but around the same time, there's 3 papers by different people. So Schofield, Dirksen, Wyman, and Domokosh, Zubkov all introduced generating sets, vector space generating sets of the semi-invariant ring, and they're all slightly different. And so I'm going to tell you about this guy's, these guys' work here. And so our contribution to this part of the story, meaning with Liana Heuberger, is that we're going to add Tableau. So we're going to add this, the combinatorics of Tableau, and define a semi-invariant coming from a Tableau, and we're going to end up with the same semi-invariants that Domokov-Zubkov had, but the Tableau help a lot with understanding. With understanding the structure. So, I'm going to tell you what these summing invariants are by taking a little bit of a segue into thinking about the semi-invariants of a maximal torus. So I'm going to let T inside my group G be the max diagonal torus. And then the character group of G is just the Weyl invariant part of the character group of T. And also, if we have F a semi-invariant alpha of some character alpha inside the character group of G, then every monomial of F is an element of the semi-invariant ring with respect to T of the same character, which we can view obviously as a character of T as well. And so we're interested in finding these guys, and we're going to work backwards. So we're going to start by monomial elements here, and I'm going to tell you a way of going, starting from a monomial element here and ending up with a semi-invariant. So cool. Backwards. So I'll have a monomial in semi-invariant T alpha of B for some Weyl invariant weight. And we'll do something that's sort of symmetrizing. And we'll end up with an F. Okay. So that's what we're going to do. All right. So we have this maximal torus here. So let's think a little bit about what these T semi-invariant monomials look like. So we have that G X in our vector space, but we can also then have that T X in our vector space. And so we can think about the GIT quotient with respect to T rather than the GIT quotient with respect to G. And that gives us another GIT quotient. And it turns out that this is also a quiver moduli space. And so it's the quiver moduli space with respect to a different quiver, which I'll call Q ab. And its torques of dimensions vector is all ones. And what this Q ab looks like, well, like locally, if our Q near some vertex looks like, say, this with dimension r, then what you do to that vertex to get Q ab is you just replace that single that vertex of dimension r with r vertices all of dimension 1, and then the arrows just look the same. So for example, for the Kronecker moduli space, you're going to get r1 vertices here and r2 vertices on the other side, and n arrows in all possible ways looking like this. And the Weyl group is going to be sim r1 cross sim r2 permutation. Okay, so a monomial M for some while invariant weight is basically just a collection of arrows in the abelianized quiver such that the number of arrows going out minus the number of arrows going in is constant along lifts. So what I mean by lift is this vertex here lifts to these R vertices. So I want some collection over here such that, you know, maybe I'll choose, where are my colored ones? Like I could choose, so there's two going in, one going out, and just one going in here. So this would be a while invariant lift over here. So this stuff can just be seen from torque geometry. And so then I want to go one step further and tell you how you can get a collection of these arrows from a combinatorial object, which we are introducing, called a linked pair of tableau. And so these linked pair of tableaus, I'm just going to tell you what the definition is for the Kronecker quiver, but actually it works for any quiver moduli space as well. So let me tell you what a Kronecker, what a linked pair of tableau is for a Kronecker moduli space, and then tell you how it gives rise to a collection of arrows like this, and hence to a monomial. And then finally, we're going to get the semi-invariant. So this is sort of the central definition, so please stop me if it's confusing. So I'm going to fix the numbers I need to get a Kronecker moduli space, so n, r1, and r2, and I'm going to fix a character, so which I'll call minus alpha 1 and alpha 2, such that alpha 1, r2 is equal to alpha 2, r1. So this is the condition we need for that lambda 0 pairing. Then, so a linked pair of tableau of weight alpha is, as you might expect, a pair of tableau T plus and T minus and a link sigma. And so my tableau are kind of boringly shaped, so they're just rectangles. So T plus is a rectangular tableau of R with R2 rows and alpha 2 columns. And T minus has the same number of boxes, but different shape, but also rectangular, so that's R1 by alpha 1. Oh, and this one is probably. So the point is that they have the same number of boxes there. And so then, elements, so unlike regular tableaus, where you have each label in your tableau is just an integer, my tableau here have two integers. Each label has two integers. So a label here looks like I and J, where I is between 1 and N, so it tells you an arrow, and J is between 1 and R1. And over here, I have labels which look similar. They're IKs, where again, my I tells me is between 1 and N, so it tells me an arrow choice, and my K is between R2 and 1. And so there's obviously the same number of boxes, and so this link here is just a bijection from the labels over here to the labels over there, satisfying that if my label here, ij, is inside the kth row, then it has to map to a label ik inside the jth row over here. So it's some, you know, these two pairs of tableau have to satisfy these conditions that each label ij in the kth row is paired with some label ik in the jth row over here.
It's always rectangular shapes.
They're always rectangular shapes. So, yeah, I'm going to do an example in a second. Yeah, so if you think about the tableaus that show up for the Grassmannian, they're always rectangular as well. So you'd have to have a flag variety to see different shapes of tableaus. I mean, the ones that give you Pflüger coordinates, not Schubert calculus tableaus. Yes, so an example. So this is pretty much the smallest non-Grassmannian Kronecker moduli space. That's not trivial. So three arrows, dimension vector 2, 3. This. Then one example is the following pair of tableaus. So I have 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 2, 1, 2. 2, 1, 3, 2, plus, minus, okay. So this is a linked pair because we can say, okay, this 1, 1 maps to this 1, 1 over here because it's on the first row and going to the first row. Same with this guy, and then this, same with the 1, 2s, they're going to match 1, 2, but then sorry, this 2, 1 over here has to go into the first row because it has a 1 there, and it maps to this 2, 3, which has to have a 3 because what's in the third row. So are there any questions about this definition here? Okay. So the point of these linked pairs it's two things. So we want to produce a monomial, and they're also going to tell us how to symmetrize in order to give us a semi-invariant. So, yeah, absolutely.
The labels and the boxes are great.
So, yes. So you can think of the first digit as telling me one arrow over here, and the second digit. The second digit and which row it's in tells me an arrow inside the abelianized quiver. So let me explain how that works. So in this case, the abelianization looks like this. And so I can either read it off T plus or T minus. They contain the same information. So this 1, 1 here tells me like this first one, the first one right here tells me I'm picking the first arrow out of those three, and it's in the first row, so it's going to this guy right here, and it has the second one, which tells me I'm coming from the first one here. Whereas this 2, 1 over here is going to be looking like this. So this is the second arrow coming from here to here. That's what this 2, 1 is giving me because it's in the third row, so it's giving me this. So I'm going to write that out actually right now, right here. So So the linked pair of tableau T plus and minus gives rise to the collection of arrows, which is the ith arrow from the jth lift, the kth lift over here for each label ij in the kth row of T plus. That's the set of arrows I get. Okay, and so then that gives me a monomial, and I will call that monomial the monomial of T plus minus. Okay, so So any linked pair like this gives rise to some monomial. And now we want to do the symmetrizing thing. So it's not quite the Weyl group acting, but it's basically the Weyl group acting. So let me tell you. So let's fix our linked pair. And then sim R1 to the alpha 1 cross sim R2 to the alpha 2 acts on T plus, or I could define it as an action on T minus, but I'll just do one side. So what is this action here? So the sim R2 alpha 2 part permutes the columns. So our linked pair looks like this. There's alpha 2 columns, each of length R2. And so one element of sim R2 to the alpha 2 just takes each of these guys and permutes them. And then the sim R1 alpha 1 part permutes the second digits using the link sigma. So each, like, so there's each column over here corresponds to one copy of that sim R1 alpha 1, and it corresponds to some collection of labels that are like something 1, something 2, something 3, all the way down to R1, and that copy just permutes that part there. So in this example right here, get some colors. So a little tidier. So there's the sim, the group acting is sim 2 to the 3 cross sim 3 to the 2. And so the sim 3 to the 2 part action is easy. It's just permuting these two columns. And then the sim 2 to the 3, so the first sim 2, we look at this first column over here, and we see where those labels came from. So up to some choice, they came from these two guys right here. The colors are not that different. And so my first sim 2 will permit these two guys. Then my second one is this guy right here, which will permute the second labels right there. And then my last one is this column, which will produce permute these two second. Okay. So if there's no questions about that, we can finally define the semi-invariant. And now things are going to go quicker. So two are linked tableau pair. Minus theta, we define F T plus minus, sigma, often drop the sigma, as the sum over all tau in this group, which is sim R1 to the alpha 1 cross sim R2 to the alpha 2 of the sine of tau of the monomial of tau. And so, for example, if you take ger Rn, then any t plus just looks like some choice I1 1 to In Ir, 1. There's only R1 is equal to 1, so there's no choice of second digits. And then our F t plus minus is the I1 through IR minor of a matrix of variables of size R2 cross N. Okay. Which is, of course, a Pflüger coordinate. And so it's, again, this is the construction of double, of linked tableau pairs can be generalized to any Kuiper moduli space. And it's not so hard to see that this data is equivalent to the data defined in the Domokhor-Stupkov paper. And therefore, they proved that the F T plus minus generate the Cox ring. Or the semi-invariant ring. Okay, so that's the Cox ring part, but we were really interested in SAGBI bases. So that's where these tableaus start to really pay off and are useful. So,
Where's the bump to that?
Oh, I didn't know that. Is that where there's a hockey stick? Yeah, that does make life easier. I didn't know. Okay. Well, I've erased this now, so I'll try to remember for the future. Okay. So, SAGBI bases. So, if we have some, so SAGBI basis is a sub-algebra analog of a Grobner basis. I don't remember what the I stands for. But that's the meaning. So if we have some sub-algebra inside a polynomial ring with m variables, where we've picked a term order, then a subset S inside our algebra A is a SAGBI basis if the initial algebra of A is equal to the initial algebra generated by S. So this is the algebra generated by the initial term of any F inside A, and this is the one that's generated by just the ones inside S. So semi-standard tableau for Grassmannians are useful. So let me just remind you what a semi-standard tableau is. So a semi-standard tableau is some tableau which is weakly increasing along rows and strictly increasing along columns. And so why are they useful? Well, for the Grassmannian, this is very well known. If RT plus is not semi-standard, then there's things called straightening laws that tell you how to expand your FT as a sum of some other FTIs where these are semi-standard of lower order. And this is a key step in showing that the Pflüger coordinates, which are these FT when you just have a single column, are a SAGBI basis. Okay. So, why are you interested in SAGBI bases? So from a SAGBI basis, there's one particular reason you might be interested is that it gives you a toric degeneration. And so this particular SAGBI basis of the Grassmannian, which has been generalized to flake varieties, gives you the Galfin Stepland. Toric degeneration, which, at least for the generalization to flake varieties as well, is due to Gonsilia Lakshmibai and Badi Rev, Hawk and Fontanine, and Von Straten. So what can we say about Kronecker moduli spaces? Because we now have these tableau as well. So the first thing we can say is that these FT plus minus for any moduli space, so not just for the Kronecker one, satisfy straightening laws. Well, maybe what I should say is they satisfy straightening laws inherited from the Grassmannian. So we can do some sort of partial straightening process for any moduli space. And we can make a stronger statement in the Kronecker case. So what about this useful thing? So let me define a semi-standard linked pair to be a pair T plus minus such that T plus and T minus are both semi-standard using the Lex ordering on the labels. And so what we show is that just like for the Grassmannian, the FT plus minus, where we take, if we run over all the semi-standard ones, are a vector space basis for the Cox ring of the Kronecker moduli space, and the leading term of FT plus minus is the monomial of T plus minus for all semi-standard T plus minus. And if you have any semi-invariant F, its leading term is the leading term of FT plus minus for some semi-standard T plus minus pair. So this is not quite a SAGBI basis, because this is an infinite set. So the way, you know, if you're thinking about the Grassmannian, you know, you have these tableaus that get wider and wider going up, but you have this theorem here. But then to get a SAGBI basis, we need to understand sort of some finite set of these, which are going to give us everything. So let me make that a little bit more precise. So the very convenient thing about Grassmannians is that if you have your T plus minus pair, and let's say you have two columns like this, then this is just the product of the first column times the product of the second column. But this does not work for Kronecker moduli spaces, sadly. So we have this definition of desperation or necessity, which is that a semi-standard tableau pair T plus minus is primitive if there are no semi-standard pairs T plus minus 1, T plus minus 2, such that, you know, if you take the product of the monomials of T plus minus 1 on the monomial of t plus minus 2, then you get the monomial t plus minus. So in our paper, we conjecture that the set is finite, and we spend a very long time proving combinatorially that it is finite for R1 is equal to R2 is equal to 2. So for R1 is equal to R2 is equal to 2, there's only finitely many. And we can write down exactly what they are. So they basically look like R1, 1, 2, 1, something 2, something 1. And so it's not hard to see that this is only a finite set. But more recently, so it's not on the archive, we can now see that there's only, not constructively, but we know that there are only finitely many primitive semi-standard tableau pairs. And so as a corollary, we get that this really is a SAGB basis. So let me tell you a couple of examples. So there's that example there, which is R1 equals R2 is equal to 2 case, which is a lot of work. And we can also look at this K323 case, which we've also seen. And so there, all the primitives are of degree minus 3, 2. So that's basically in degree 1. And there's 20 of them. And for the next one up, so this is a 12-dimensional space in weight minus 3, 2. There's 126 primitive ones, and out of which are all the ones. And then in the next degree, there's 86 primitive ones out of a total of 4,032. And then in degree 3, there's 20 primitives out of 59,000 and change semi-standard tableaus. And after that, there's no more primitives. And so in these two examples, we can therefore construct a quark degeneration explicitly, although in theory we have another one. And so recess and then we can wrap up. So in terms of why you might care about toric degenerations, so the sort of general principle or motto is that they extend the combinatorial control that we have from toric varieties to other spaces. So two such examples of this are integrable systems. So due to Harada-Kave, whenever you have a toric degeneration, you can produce an integrable system on your starting space. So for the Grassmannian in this example, this is the Gelfand and Setland integrable system. And so what we're actually seeing here, so for K and R1, R2, we get an integrable system whose image is the intersection of the Guelf and Setland polytope of two Grassmannians. And then a second application is mirror symmetry. And so in the smaller example here, we can write down a Laurent polynomial mirror, or candidate Laurent polynomial mirror, for this moduli space here. And this moduli space here has another construction as a zero locus inside a Grassmannian. So using that construction, you can actually compute terms of the period sequence there. And so Peter Bellman's, my computer was not up to the computation, but he can check that the first 20 terms of the period sequence are correct. So they agree with the quantum period. So in terms of future directions, you know, why I really like the Guelf and Setland torque degeneration is there's all these combinatorics of ladder diagrams that you get once you understand these semi-standard Young tableaux. So I would really like to be able to see what sort of generalization there is using these double semi-standard tableaux. But we're not there yet. So, yeah, thank you for inviting me.
All right, questions? Is there some good way to think about what the polytope beginning in general is?
So I think the best general way of thinking about it that I've thought of so far is that it's, you have for your Kronecker moduli space K and R1, R2, you can think about the Grassmannian Gr R1 and R2 and the Grassmannian Gr R2 and R1, and you can embed both these Guelf and Setland polytopes inside R and R1, R2. Mm-hmm. And if you take the cones over them, and then you intersect them, and then you take some height where it's actually integral, then that's going to be the polytope you're getting.
But you sort of said that this should all work for much more general equations, right?
So the tableaus work. I don't have a SAGB basis for more general quivers. So the straightening, like sort of once you get paths, I'm not so clear on how to, like, it's possible it's just the semi-standard ones once you pick an ordering on paths, but I don't know. The straightening laws don't give you quite enough. Yeah.
Does any of this technology apply to like back into your programming sources?
So I think they're a little bit different. So I think that you'd have to start doubling things, and then it would look, and then it would look a little bit like, I'm not sure how the combinatorics would generalize, but it's a good question.
Yeah, in particular, like this thing to think about the Nakajima variety is really is like particular as Kronecker.
I mean, yeah, Kronecker are pretty well studied, so I would guess there might be.
It's not the convergent one, I think that's
plenty. Well, yes, in the, what is it, N equals, oh, sorry.
R1 equals R1 1.
Is one case, yeah, I'm sure it'll be the convergent one, I think there's one, yeah. Probably should absolutely swear to that, but it seems very bad. Yeah, no, I must forget. But then other times, I don't know, I have no idea.
What about a sigma quiver?
So I think the moduli spaces are not smooth then, so a lot of the things I'm interested wouldn't be interesting to me then. I think there are some things known about what the semi-invariant ring is, but I'm not sure.
You know, what kind of correlations are satisfied with these functions which you construct?
Yeah, good question. I don't have a clear combinatorial description. So I mean, I have these straightening laws, which sort of tell you that there should, you know, if you have something like Ft plus minus 1 times F2, you know, Ft 2 plus minus, then you know this sort of should be, this is the same thing as like if you just glom your two tableaus together. And so now this is probably not semi-standard, and so you should be able to expand it very similarly to how you would do for the thing. But I don't have any like sort of nice generating set of like quadratic relations or anything. But yeah, that's something I'd like to think about.
But in case of your plans, these functions, they could satisfy these Bucher coordinates.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
This formula just looks
like yeah, they're exactly the same as Bucher coordinates. Yeah.
But either way, any example of that work, you can which is beyond Grassmannian, but still simple, and write down this explicitly.
What the semi-invariants are themselves?
Yeah, well, what
I mean, I'm sure I could, I'm not off the top of my head, but yeah, I mean, I think that for small ones, you should be able to write down some relations without too much trouble. But like they are really large, like there's many, many terms very quickly. So like it becomes harder to work with them explicitly. But yeah, the tableau should sort of give you some sort of clue. What's going on?
And you mentioned some integrable system here.
Yeah.
What kind of integrable system?
So I don't have it explicitly. Hereta Cavey have a paper where they say from a torque generation you can get it. And so it's the way it works is that there's some map from the thing that you're degenerating to your degenerate torque variety. And then the integrable system is the one from the torque variety composed with that map.
So there is some symplectic structure here, at least, yeah.
Yeah, so there should be. I would like to be able. So for the Grassmannian, you can construct the integrable system very explicitly. Like that's the inspiration for their paper was the Gulf and Setland integrable system. But that sort of takes a very different construction. I think it's like thinking of the Grassmannian as a particular orbit inside O, and I don't know how to generalize that to a Kronecker moduli space, but that'd be a good question. I'd be curious about that for sure.
Thinking of the Grassmannian as like an orbit, unitary matrices with all of one of the eigenvalues the same, right? And then you can look at the characteristic polynomial or the eigen.
Yeah.
The top left quarter, all different sizes. And because it's the Grassmannian, like those are all independent. But.
Yeah.
But can't you just pull back the geometric projective? It's the same. Model.
Yeah, I mean, these are all K.
Yeah.
Because you're writing them as right. You could also write them as symplectic reductions by a unitary group inside this geometry.
Oh, right. But a symplectic reduction doesn't give you an integrable system.
No.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Sorry. Sorry. Yes. Yeah. For sure. Yes. That's easy to construct for sure. I mean, I'm not 100% sure, but I think these Kronecker moduli spaces are basically the like you can construct them as the GIT quotient of a Grassmannian. And so sort of any, like that might be one way of sort of understanding what the integrable system is, but then you have to think about this GIT quotient, which is hard to do. So I think it's studied for a torus, but I don't know, that I haven't seen anything about
it. All right, any other questions? All right, thanks again.